now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Good news and bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah! See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death. Oh.
And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain.
Back to the House of Pain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast from classic cults and the cheese in between. The movies are beef, the entertainment is grade A, and I'm your host, Mr. Jason Giaconetti. Join my dad, Mr. Al Giaconetti.
Good morning, Jason. Today we've got an anniversary movie that, believe it or not, I can't believe it's 40 years old. And we're talking about The Terminator.
And we'll get to it right after this.
In the 21st century, a weapon will be invented like no other. This weapon will be powerful, versatile, and indestructible. It can't be reasoned with. It can't be bargained with. It will feel no pity, no remorse, no pain, no fear. It will have only one purpose: to return to the present and prevent the future. This weapon will be called the Terminator.
You're dead, honey.
What day is it? The date?
12th May, Thursday.
What year?
I'm Reese, DN38416, assigned to protect you. You've been targeted for termination.
Why does it want me?
Why me?
Arnold Schwarzenegger is the Terminator. Your future is in its hands.
The Terminator is released October 26, 1984, with a 107-minute running time. Your director, of course, is James Cameron, who we all know who James Cameron is. And this is all before he became James Cameron. He just was the young guy James Cameron,
right,
kind of thing. He also is your writer, along with Gail Ann Hurd. Gail Ann Hurd also acted as producer on this movie. Of course, stars Arnold Schwarzenegger in one of his very famous, this is his breakout role kind of thing. I mean, he was Conan and stuff like that too, but like this was, I mean, the Terminator kind of really put him on the map, and one of maybe the only time he's ever played a villain until he was Mr. Freeze in, you know, a Batman movie. Yeah. At that point, he was,
well, when he read the script, he was supposed to be Reese.
Yeah. But it doesn't make any sense to me, Reese.
Yeah. But it didn't. And so they would have had to get somebody else to do the Terminator.
Yeah, well, the Terminator originally they had talked about Lance Hendrickson being the Terminator, yeah, but they wanted someone smaller. But people just didn't want that. It just didn't make him a villain.
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense. You have this huge guy protecting the heroine, and then here's this little guy coming after him. But they thought it looked different. It's fine. This worked out perfectly. This is actually exactly what you needed, you know, and things. So, of course, Michael Biehn, who would later go on to be Hicks in Aliens with James Cameron, is here as Reese. Linda Hamilton, who would go on to, you know, play opposite, what's his name, Ron Perlman in Beauty and the Beast, which many people remember from TV. Paul Winfield, and of course, the aforementioned Lance Hendrickson is here too. And Bill Paxton in a very small role as a punk.
And yet he probably still has the distinction of being in the movies that made the most money.
He does. Well, that's thanks to Titanic. But a lot of it has to be the fact his friendship with James Cameron. James Cameron used him on a lot of films. And so he's been in a lot of movies that have made a lot of money. Like, so, but not just that. Then you also look at the movies that was not James Cameron, like Twister and things like that. He was just, why? Because Bill Paxton can be the dad. He can be the best friend. He can be the army grunt. He's versatile enough. Some of you are like, he's also the big brother in Weird Science, who's a jerk, you know, kind of thing. Like, he's versatile in those roles. And as he got older, he looked those parts. I mean, he's in Predator 2, for crying out loud, you know, kind of thing. So he's fought a Terminator. He's fought an alien. He fought a Predator. None of those worked out well for him, but he fought all of those things. So, you know, you're... Music is Brad Fidel. Your production companies here were Pacific Western Productions, or Hemdel Pacific Western Productions, and Eurofilm Funding 84 Cinema. When your course distribution by none other than Orion Pictures, this is when Orion was just starting to get into their wheelhouse of like their 80s blockbusters kind of thing. They were behind a lot of things, especially like RoboCop and stuff like that, that were just... if you saw Orion, you had a chance of seeing this is going to have some action in it. It might not be the deepest story on the world, but they definitely were going to put something on the screen that was worth watching. And your estimated budget, about $6.4 million, and the box office on the movie alone was $78.3 million. So James Cameron, as some of you might remember, he was brought on to do a little movie called Piranha 2, The Spawning, because the director quit. And... you know, never let Roger Corman say that he didn't have let a good opportunity go by the wayside. He goes, hey, you guy working on the sets, you want to do this thing? Sure. Because he was there. And so from that, he, you know, started making friends with, people from New World Pictures, which is where him and, you know, Gail Hurd got to be friends. Cause she worked for New World Pictures as well. Which also helped him getting the deal over at Orion. And then at Orion, you wind up having, you know, executive producers then working with Hemdel Film Corporation, which, again, just one thing led to another, led to another. And if, once they came off of, so you had filming conflicts. So Cameron originally was looking at things, and Conan the Destroyer, which is also 1984, he started looking at, like, Schwarzenegger. He wanted Schwarzenegger to be in the movie, which is why this release is so late in 84 compared to being earlier. And he had to wait for him to finish up his commitments there. And of course, everyone knows Schwarzenegger and, you know, he obviously was in Pumping Iron and all the other stuff he was in, but he had been in Conan the Barbarian, which was, you know, a big deal. I mean, kind of thing, but not exactly showing super deep acting chops.
No.
Conan the Destroyer is a lot of fun, but not super deep acting chops there. And here he's playing a machine. So they figured he definitely could fit this. Schwarzenegger tells a very funny story. He was on with Dan Patrick a while ago. And he talks a story about how he would say, well, that's not how a machine would talk. And James Cameron goes, I write the effing scripts. You say the effing words. Just do what I'm telling you. It'll work. And, you know, Schwarzenegger trusted James Cameron. Everything worked. And they later worked again, you know, together and stuff. And they became good friends.
Yeah, they think somebody said he had less than the actual 100 words in the movie.
Right. But it makes sense because but that's the whole point was he didn't like the way things, he goes, James Cameron's like, trust me, you don't know, like kind of thing. I know what I'm doing.
Right. And yet he has probably one of the most famous lines ever.
Yeah. So, and then during that same time, James Cameron was actually working on a script for Rambo First Blood Part 2. And he actually was currently working on Aliens, which again, he wound up making. And then of course you had your miniatures and stop motion animation, which is Stan Winston and Gene Warren Jr. coming in to work on that. Because if you're going to work, I mean, we now know this. At the time, maybe people maybe didn't know. James Cameron was friends with Stan Winston. I mean, they had, you know, that's why, you know, things, that's why the Predator looks the way he is after, you know, they were flying to, you know, wherever they're South America, where they were going, they were on a plane and he'd shown them the drawings and James Cameron said, what about that one? Mandibles, his mandible, ooh, this will work. And, you know, it's so funny how these great minds kind of get together and they start working. And it just was a happen chance that the director quit and James Cameron got his chance to make Piranha 2, which led him to making friends with people at New World, which led him to making friends with people at Orion. And he started meeting people who were making B movies at the time.
And you know, not what you know sometimes. Right. And yet if you know what you know and you get the break, then it just mushrooms. I mean, it didn't Stan Winston at this time. I mean, he had this was his, I would say is his studio's breakout movie.
Yeah.
Because after this, then all of a sudden, Stan Winston here, Stan Winston there.
The aliens really made them. I mean, the Alien Queen alone, the puppetry on the Alien Queen is still, they talk about it in the Stan Winston documentary. They talk about like all that stuff. It's still, to this day, amazing that they pulled it off. There's so many people in there working this thing, and you're like, but it looks so real. And you're like, that's why they were the best.
Yeah.
You know, and we're not even talking about Predator yet. We're not even talking about having to make a suit with Steve Wang and Matt Rose and all those guys, where the suit has no seams, which was, of course, leads back to Monster Squad, where they made the suit for the Gillman, which has no seams. Like, how does a suit not have seams and still move and flow and not buckle? That's why these guys are literally the geniuses that created this stuff. Again, paying homage all the way back to Harryhausen with stop motion. That's what this is. The Terminator parts of this, where he's doing stop motion, it's paying homage directly to Jason and the Argonauts.
Yeah, and what... You know, with a lot of people, when you watch this movie, we know it's 1984, but if you're new to this and you start watching this, first thing you say is, well, that CGI looks, you know, poor, or that's all they can do. But there was no CGI.
Which is why this looks good.
Yeah.
Everything's in camera. Everything's real. There are some parts where you can see it's showing its age. And I don't mean just the music or the dress or anything like that, but there's some effects that now show their age that now they would digitally just clean things up.
Right.
But that's part of what makes it so unique. That's why when you watch, somebody took the skeleton fight from Jason and the Argonauts, and then they digitally cleaned it up and they smoothed it out and it looks fake now. I'm like, how did something that looks so real, like now looks so fake? Because you sped up things. You took away the little defects. Like that needs to be there. The grain of the film needs to be there. Talos walking should look mechanical. When you make him smooth, he looks fake, you know? And that's part of what makes this so well. So of course, we all know this. Terminator was released, had super low expectations. Everyone's expecting this thing to totally tank out. It grossed over 78 million against only $6.5 million on, the box office. Cameron's film career took off. Schwarzenegger became literally the hottest leading man in Hollywood, next to like Sylvester Stallone and whatever. I mean, literally those guys could, and I mean, it's before Tom Cruise and stuff like that, because he hadn't made Top Gun yet. Right. What I'm saying is, but Stallone and Schwarzenegger, one and two, one and one A, you know, kind of for a super action hero. So you have Rambo, you have the Terminator, you have, you know, Rocky, and you have Predator, you have all these different things. Like, Stallone had started earlier, obviously, with First Blood and Rocky, but now
he did Cobra.
Rambo and Rocky already happened.
Yeah.
And though, let's be honest, those are the two biggest roles that Stallone is always known for, being Rambo and Rocky. Stallone, had that going for him because he started before. Once Schwarzenegger was the Terminator, like, even though it's the villain and he eventually becomes the hero of the later one, like, everyone's, he's the Terminator. But then he didn't have to be, like, not everyone remembers. The thing is, people will say, when they look at Stallone, they remember him as Rambo and they remember him as Rocky, right, kind of thing. And most people. With Schwarzenegger, people remember him as the Terminator. That's what they remember as. You don't remember him as Matrix. You don't remember him as Dutch. I mean, I do, and you do. But many people don't remember his name as Matrix, or he's referred to as Matrix in John, you know, kind of thing, in Commando, right? But it's not like he didn't, or like even his part in Raw Deal. Like, you don't remember his name in all those things, right? But you know who he is. I mean, maybe you remember his name is Dutch in Predator, but it's not necessarily that you have to remember. He was in Predator, or they just know what he's in. Like, you know, what's his name and like, who is he in True Lies? I don't know, but True Lies is amazing, right? Kind of thing, right? Yeah. In that movie, people still talk about True Lies and how, what a great movie that's forgotten by some, but then people, once you talk about it, be like, oh my God, the scene on the bridge and this and this. Even to the point where Amy plays Detective John Kimble. I only know that because it's in the trailer for Kindergarten Cop, right? Stallone tried playing comedy, didn't work. Schwarzenegger can go and play comedy. In Twins is literally, people love that movie still. It made Schwarzenegger so much, it got him past Stallone. Because Stallone then also got into the other end of it, though. He was writing, he's trying to get into directing, he's executive producing. Schwarzenegger, again, might have been executive producer on things, but he wasn't, you know, writing scripts and directing. He's making movies, which is how he got to be, you know, bigger than life. Because it's not, the other thing too, it doesn't hurt that Stallone is, you know, again, while in amazing shape, like literally looks like he's all, you know, cut out of stone, is not a very tall guy, you know, kind of thing, right? Where Schwarzenegger is a massive person. He stands next to human beings and you're like, well, that guy's huge, you know, which is funny because think about it. In Conan the Destroyer, I know we haven't got to the Terminator here. Conan the Destroyer, they had to find someone bigger than him. But then they need someone bigger than Wilt Chamberlain to play the god that comes to life. And who's that? Andre the Giant. Because who's bigger than Wilt Chamberlain? Andre the Giant. Mm-hmm. And then you see a picture. It looks like Schwarzenegger standing there with Wilt Chamberlain and Andre the Giant. He looks like their son. It's like when Shaquille O'Neal stands with Kevin Hart. Yeah. Like it looks like, oh, he brought his kid with him. No, that's Kevin Hart. That's a grown adult. You know, kind of thing. It's funny to think about that now, because you look at that now, you don't think anything of it, but it's like, oh my God, like how humongous Andre the Giant was and how big, you know, Wilt Chamberlain was. Because Wilt Chamberlain was, I mean, he was very tall and he was big for the NBA at the time. He was no Shaquille O'Neal. Now Shaquille O'Neal sounds like somebody, looks like he's a house kind of thing because he's just broad. But it's just, you think about how big Schwarzenegger is when you stand him next to an actual human being. You're like, oh, that guy's humongous, you know.
And the path that he and Stallone, you know, wound up doing. Schwarzenegger became the governor of California.
Yeah.
I mean, how you couldn't get more diverse and different as an individual than be known as either the governor of California or the Terminator.
Right. And considering that he's not even a U.S. born citizen, that he had to go through naturalization and do all this stuff, like that's a very hard thing to do. And, you know, again, when you watch Pumping Iron, for those who have never seen Pumping Iron, it's worth going to watch. It's not, I mean, it's not going to change your life, but just to see the amount of work he was putting in and then remembering that Lou Ferrigno's standing next to him. I mean, Lou Ferrigno's the Hulk.
And Ferrigno is bigger.
Yeah. Well, physically, he's larger.
Larger.
But he was not as shredded. I mean, Schwarzenegger just got himself just shredded up. And what's his name? Franco.
Yes.
I forgot his last name. I mean, talk about a small guy. He's probably in better shape than either one of them for his weight and what he's picking up. I mean, they're lifting cars in that thing, and it's not even strongman competition. It's just that the car was stuck, got to get it out of here, picked it up another way. But Pumping Iron is a very different kind of thing. It doesn't, looking back now, it does not always portray certain aspects of Arnold Schwarzenegger as a competitor in the best light in the way he treated Ferrigno and stuff like that. But that's what happens when you're competing. You don't have to always be friends. But anyway, all right, so let's get to, just want to throw real quick. Obviously there's a whole bunch of sequels and TV series and comic books and novels and video games. Terminator in 2008 was selected by the Library of Congress to be on the National Film Registry. That's a pretty big deal for a little tiny sci-fi movie that no one cared about that was supposed to do nothing and maybe hopefully make their $6 million back. All right, here we go. All right, so let's go. The story goes a little something like this. A cybernetic organism travels from the incredible year of 2029. The incredible year, that's a few years away, to the amazing year of 1984 in Los Angeles. The cyborg is an assassin known as the Terminator, disguised as a male human, is programmed to hunt and kill a woman named Sarah Connor. Separately, a human soldier named Kyle Reese also travels back from 2029, intent on stopping the Terminator. And so we get there, and this is the scene where Schwarzenegger is now naked, and he's kneeling and he stands up, and it's like very like famous. Even the covers now, even like people will do that. He stands up and he walks. And of course they don't have to show you his rear end, but they do kind of thing. And you realize like this guy is just like, I mean, Schwarzenegger is in amazing shape, but he doesn't look like he does when he's competing. He just looks, I mean, he's not thinned out. So probably people don't understand what that means. So you're thinking like, this guy's not thin. When you look at Schwarzenegger, when he's competing in like the Mr. Olympia and stuff like that, you do what you call thin out. You get all the water out of your body and it makes your skin really like tight to your body and whatever. So your muscles show off better. I'm not saying he wasn't in, he probably was stronger now than he was during then. Cause actually when you thin out, you get weak. You're in amazing shape, but you're really weak because you've now not eaten. You've taken all the water out of your body and stuff like that. But he's just a massive individual. He comes upon the three punks, right? One of which is Bill Paxton. And the other one is Brian. And I forgot his name. But he would be in horror movies and stuff later on too. And of course, this guy's a couple cans short of a six pack. There's one liner through the entire thing. And the best is, wash day tomorrow, nothing clean, right? And it's just like nothing clean, right? And it's like, oh boy, kind of thing. That he punches him right through his gut and stuff, and he puts on all the punk clothing. Now, you're saying to yourself, I don't think these guys are the same size. Look, you're willing to buy that he's a machine covered by, he's a hyper alloy, chassis covered by human skin that came through time, but you're not willing to believe that he can't squeeze himself into a pair of pants. So, and of course the clothing he puts on, it's very punk 1984, yeah. Like it looks like that. And it's very iconic too. Even putting on the gloves, which makes no, you don't need the gloves, but he puts them on to fit in. And of course then Kyle comes through, very different situation. He's in a lot of pain, because his body's not designed to take that kind of time travel. He has the run-in with the bum where he steals his pants. And then they break in the department store, and he puts on the Nikes, of course, which nowadays people would lose their minds. Like, oh my God, a pair of those Nikes right now.
Yeah.
If you had a mint from 1984, a couple $1,000s possibly, depending on which exactly what brand they were. So, then we get the idea that like now they're back here. Now you still don't quite know what's happening. You know, something's coming back. You had a little bit in the beginning of like the future. It's like, it's just, you're not quite sure 100% what's happening. You see the Terminator go to a telephone directory, and he looks up Sarah Connor, and he sees that there are
three.
So he takes the thing, got it, and he's going to go get this person. So he must have some reason to be back here looking for Sarah Connor. And that's when we first meet Linda Hamilton, and she's riding a scooter to a Bob's Big Boy ripoff, which is, I forgot the name of the, it's not Big Chief. It's something like that, like Big Sam's or something. But it's supposed to be like, give you the idea of like a Bob's Big Boy, right? Kind of thing. But it's a restaurant kind of thing. Yeah. Like behind it looks like Perkins. So, now she's there. And what happens is you have the Terminator goes to the house and he runs over the Ertl truck in the road kind of thing. And the woman, a woman who's got kids playing around, and he's Sarah Connor. Oh no, well, he has to get the guns first. Hang on. Yeah. So I skipped the whole part of the guns. Sorry. So he goes to the gun store, and who's running the gun store, Dad? Dick Miller. It's Dick Miller. Of course it's Dick Miller.
Man, I don't think he's credited.
So Dick Miller often is not credited.
Yeah.
But of course, Dick Miller has a direct tie-in to New World Pictures, which of course is Roger Corman. He's in all the Corman movies, which is has to be Dick Miller. In fact, if Dick Miller was not in this movie, I would feel gypped because he deserved it. He goes through all the different guns, and I like that he asked for a plasma rifle. Just what you see on the shelf, buddy. Oh, and he goes, which one do you take? All of them. And I was like, oh, I'm going to close early. Like he's like, let's go, kind of thing. And it's so funny because we've seen Dick Miller in so many different roles, right, through the years, like kind of thing. He's in, The Terror. Mm-hmm. And of course, then he makes an appearance in Target because he's in The Terror kind of thing. And then he's in how many different Corman movies? He's in The Howling. He's everywhere. He's in Gremlins. Like everyone who cut their teeth with Corman, made sure they put Dick Miller somewhere in their movie. You got to put him in there. You got to get a little.
He was never the star.
Oh, but he doesn't have to be the star. Well, that guy.
And yet he's got memorable roles.
Yeah. Well, because he plays a character you can connect with. He's the gun shop owner, right? Like, okay, he's the gun shop owner, but like, well, that guy shouldn't have a big role or anything, but the way he delivers his lines is memorable. You can't do that. Right. And he gets blown away. And he's in the movie for what? 2 minutes, minute and a half. And it's great. And you remember that scene. I mean, it doesn't hurt too that, I mean, that is the most well-stocked gun store that I have ever seen. It had, he had an Uzi. He had what, I mean, he's like Uzi 9mm. He's pulling things. He's like, any of these would be great for home defense. And you're just like, oh my God, dude. Like, these are insane guns. The gun with the laser tracking thing, which was new at the time. Of course, that became iconic there too, because the red beam matches his eye, which is what, you know, the Terminator eventually, we later learned that. Goes there, he kills the Sarah Connor at her house, and then we learn, you know, that this person who we only know her name, Sarah Connor, because she punched in, and her friend's like, you're dead, honey, kind of thing, like when she's out there because they're watching the news. It's so simple a concept. The movie is not super deep. The concept is very straightforward. We're sending this thing back to kill him. Where does she live? I don't know. Los Angeles. Her name's Sarah Connor. That's all we know. And it's just so systematic, and it makes perfect sense that you can't even say like, oh, well, but it makes sense.
Yeah. And at this point, you have no idea why he's coming back to kill Sarah Connor.
We don't know why he wants Sarah Connor dead. Just that he's coming here and he's killing these people named this. But it's such a simple concept that it doesn't need 10 minutes of explanation in the beginning. It's going to explain itself. So now she's at the bar having dinner, right? When she goes back, the roommate's there with... And
he's another guy.
That's a guy. He went on to be in a whole... He's in Top Gun. He's the wingman for ICE. He's Val Kilmer's co-pilot. Cannot remember his name, but that's who he is. Because the beach scene where they're playing volleyball and Top Gun and stuff, he's there. He's with ICE.
Isn't he also the boyfriend in Halloween?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think that's the same guy.
Because as soon as I saw him, I said, that's the guy in Halloween.
I don't think so. I'd have to look. Remember, Halloween is 1978. It would be a number of years later.
Yeah.
But, you know, kind of thing. But he's definitely in Top Gun. He's ICE's co-pilot. Not to be confused with Goose, who didn't make it through the canopy. Which is Anthony Edwards. But he's there. And so, again, another face you know, young face. Like, oh, I know that guy later on. You'd know him from there. She's at dinner at the bar at the whatever. And the other, Sarah Connor's now dead. And she's like, turn it off. And now she's trying to get, that's when the Terminator comes in. And he kills the boyfriend. He kills her, shoots her dead. And that's when Sarah calls and said that she thinks someone's following her. And it's Reese following her. But Reese is trying to follow her because he's not sure exactly who she is. The thing is this. He says he wasn't sure, but he knows. He knows it's her because he has the picture.
And
he knows, you know.
That's what I'm saying. And when you're watching the movie, you're saying, how in the hell does he know that this is the right Sarah Connor?
Right. But yet the Terminator doesn't know.
Yeah.
How does the machine, who knows everything, not know it's her, but he does? And it's so great because the opening of the movie, we see him, you know, we see them, the war and whatever. You're like, what is going on? Like this... In 1984, 2029 seemed like a lifetime and a half away.
Right.
And now, which we were in spitting distance of it,
around the corner.
You know, we're much closer to, isn't it funny? We're much closer to that than we are to, we're closer to 2029 than we are to even 2000, you know, kind of thing, right? Or even 2010. So to think that that's so, you know, that was so far away, come back. Anyway, so Reese is following her. The Terminator hears her say that she's at, the Tech Noir, which is, you know, so it's such a some 80s thing. Now, here's the only thing.
And she also calls the police.
She calls the police over and over again. And they won't get it right.
Yeah.
But she finally gets Paul Winfield's character, who's the chief, on the phone. And then we have Lance Henriksen in that same scene. Again, two great actors. Lance Henriksen, much more known for his B movie work. Paul Winfield, known for being an actual, you know, big Shakespearean time. Actor, too, right. You know, kind of thing. But it lends gravity to the role. It's not just some guy. It's a guy who can really act. The best is, though, and this might be the only thing that I find to be unbelievable. It doesn't cost $5 to get in the bar. It costs $5.25. Why does it cost $5.25? No club owner wants to be making change. No club owner wants making the change. That's the only thing. It would have been $6 or $5. I'm just saying, but it probably really was $5.25 at some bar that they went to. They said, well, let's just use it, right? It has no other purpose in the movie because she goes, it's whatever. She gives her the money and then she slides her back $3. What?
Yeah.
What? Like that to me is like, that seems wrong. But at the same time, that's probably the realest thing in the movie. It probably was what they were charging.
Because
it's a real club they're using day for night.
How does Reese get in?
Because he doesn't. So, that's the question. They never tell you how he gets in. What we're assuming is that he's now, because remember, he steals the guy's pants. He steals the trench coat from the store. He steals the sneakers that he might have stolen some money. Like, he knows what money is. He just didn't know what things are, right? Kind of thing, right? So the assumption is that he stole the money. Now, remember, at this point, he's got a shotgun that he sawed the back off of, and he's tied up and he has it inside his coat. Because we also have the part where he steals the car. Right before this, he steals the car. So he knows how to hotwire a car.
Right.
I mean, and then we get his dream where he's going back and he wakes up and it's like the machines. It's all about the machines and this nightmare that he's lived his whole life. This complete nightmare is like, so that he understands so much about growing up after the war. He grew up after the war. And that's the crazy part. You're like, after the war, like that war's not in 2029. Like, when is he growing up? Like, this guy's almost 30. Was it 2000s? Like, that's the problem. Now you start piecing this together. They don't tell you, but you start piecing together. Like, wait, it's 84 and they're coming from 2029. But when did the war happen? In 2000? Yeah. In 1999? Did it happen? Because now we aren't even at the Y2K, all that stuff happening. Like, when did this happen? When would this go on? And at the same time, what's happening in the real world? Right? You have the whole Star Wars program. We have satellites in space. They're supposed to be able to shoot down Russian rockets. Who's controlling that? Is it always a human? They wanted to talk about putting machines in control. Like, that's stuff that was in the news as, like, you know, not sci-fi, as real life. Real life,
yeah. Well, remember, Reagan was the president at the time, and that was the whole thing. They actually funded a program called Star Wars.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying, though. All those things that were kind of like, this is saying that all happened. This is saying this all happened. So here you are hearing about this and it's kind of happening, kind of not, whatever. But then it all winds up happening and leads to the destruction of man, which is what everyone was worried about when this stuff started happening. So you're playing on fear, easy to do, right? Much like the Red Scare, playing on the Red Scare in an Invasion of the Body Snatchers, a loss of self and loss of you are. People worry the machines were taken over. You know, nowadays we don't think of any self-checkout line. No big deal. Okay. You're basically working for free because God forbid, right? You know, kind of thing. You don't think about that. You go, you scan this, scan it. You don't think about it anymore, right? You carry around literally a computer in your pocket. Back in 1984, I had to make a phone call. I got to find a payphone. Anyone got a dime? Anyone got a quarter, you know, kind of thing. You know, it's just one of those things. Just like, you don't understand it if you didn't live that time. And that's one of the things. At school, my kids who are Gen Z, they don't understand even millennials who don't quite understand Gen X kind of thing. They're like, well, what are you talking about? I'm like, well, you guys don't get it. I was like, the back end of Gen X, which is me and like Luke and like, you know, people my age, we're really like the Oregon Trail generation. Like, we literally had rotary phones, you know, nailed to the wall. And we've had cell phones. Like, we went from, like, I remember clearly having phones that were rotary attached to a wall where you couldn't walk away. And you didn't know who was calling. There was no caller ID. You just gasped, oh no, answered it and found out, right? If you weren't home, if you were happy to have an answer machine and it had enough tape left in it to record, you know what I'm saying? Like, and then you went from that and computers being whatever to literally doing this. We were the ones who kind of transitioned that gap, you know, kind of thing, which is, my kids don't understand that. Like, I tell my kids all the time, I go, we are the generation that literally defined F around and find out. Like, push us and watch what happens. Because they don't understand that there's no safe space and stuff. This is what this movie's talking about. We were in a time in the 80s. And again, I was young, 6 years old when this movie comes out. I'm not like, you know, I wasn't like living the 80s. But like, if you were at the tail end of Gen X, you know, the late 70s, early 80s, you lived through a time when on the news every night, they're talking about, well, the Russians, if they launch a missile, we have a laser to shoot out. A missile and a laser?
Yeah. I mean, the difference between then and now is Pong and Xbox, was it 12, 15?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, I understand what I'm saying, but the idea that they're taking this and they're not hitting you with tons of story. We're filling you in and you're filling it in. When you get to the club, and now This movie has not been slow. You're into this movie, but literally now Cameron just says, okay, let's turn this switch on, because this club scene has got people getting mowed down with machine guns. There's stuff. You're like, whoa, we just went from science fiction. Okay, I'm following. Now it's action. Now it is street action. Yeah. But at the same time, you're now like, you know, okay. So here's Reese gets in. He's sitting away from her at the bar. She notices him. And then that's when she, Reese is there. She knocks her purse over and she picks it up and she looks. And the Terminator sees her, takes the gun out, and now has the red beam locked right in her head. And there's nothing more definitive about this movie when you think about it. His eye is red. We later learn the eye is red and stuff like that. But that's exactly what it is, right? And that's when Reese blasts him with the shotgun. Literally shoots him clean in the chest with a shotgun. He goes down. Everyone freaks out. He goes to try to get her out of there. He gets up. And now you're like, oh boy, you just got shot in the chest with a shotgun. And you stand up. And now he just takes the Uzi and just unloads. He's shooting bodies the whole place. Women are getting gunned down. Guys are getting destroyed. It is like, you know, and what does Reese say? Come with me if you want to live.
Yeah.
Which would later get used again in Terminator 2 when the Terminator says, right? But it's like, it seems like such a throwaway, nothing line.
Right.
But it's so important right there, because she either goes or she dies. And she said, well, I want to live. So she gets out of there, right? But she doesn't trust Reese. Now you get in the back. He's got the car. They're getting away. He's on the hood of the car. Now we're talking straight action movie here. Yeah, shooting at him.
And the thing with that scene is that it's not that he gets shot in the chest with the shotgun, and then he gets up with the Uzi. The scene continues.
Yeah.
They go through the plate glass window of the front, and he shoots him again, and then again. And that's when they get in the car. The Terminator actually catches the car.
Yeah.
And then gets on the...
Well, but then that's called back again in Terminator 2 when the T-1000 catches it. It's different. And that's when he blasts him in the face with the shotgun, which is what you wanted them to do here, but they couldn't. They're trying to get away. And now you have them on the run trying to hide. But how can Sarah trust this guy? She thinks he's been stalking her for days. She's like, I had to wait till he moved on you to be sure. He knew, but he couldn't figure out who the Terminator was. That's the problem. As he says, he goes, the 800 series had rubber skin. We could spot them easy. T-100s had rubber skin. The 800s, we couldn't tell them. They look human. So he had to wait till he acted on her. He knew who she was, but he didn't know who the Terminator was. Because a Terminator could be a big guy, a small guy, whatever. He's supposed to look human.
Yeah, the thing is that you would think that there might have been an assembly line of these guys, and they all were done the same. You know, when you see the flashbacks, they're all in uniform, and
some of them are.
Yeah.
But then they have the ones undercover when they're trying to break in, and he's got the rags on. He throws the rags off, and he's almost naked. The whole point is they don't need clothes.
Right.
The clothes were just to blend in and trick the humans. Right.
Yes.
So again, it makes perfect sense. Now they're on the run. They go and they try to. Now the cops are after them, because now you shoot up a whole place, and the cops are coming anyway. Now there's lots of cops, right? They go and they steal the other car, and now the Terminator has stolen a police car, right? So he's got rid of him now because he's driving the car, and he can mimic their voices and whatever, and he takes them. Then you lead to a chase scene.
Yeah, and he's got the police radio on.
Right. Yeah, listening to where things are. So now when they steal the other car, he's shooting at them. There's a chase scene, and that's a great chase scene because you see the dead end. You see the wall, and they're getting close. You see the wall. They're getting close, and it's like very much it's the old Alfred Hitchcock thing. I'm going to show you. When he's showing you the wall, and as they're going towards the wall, you're like, okay, they better stop, turn.
He shows you the speedometer.
Right, and they're going, and they can't slow down because stopping is not going to happen. So what happens is Sarah's like, they jerk the wheel, and the Terminator plows directly now. That is a real car hitting a real wall. Now, it's not a person in there, but it's a real car hitting a real wall. I understand it was dragged with a wire or whatever, but it's real. It's not CG'd, right? And that's when he tries to get away. The cops get, and they arrest Reese, right? So now he's going to be arrested, taking her in. And what happens? Instead of it being where you think like, oh, the Terminator's going to get out of that car and just start opening a fire. Well, now there's too many cops. Now there's too many like people. Now there's too much. So he just walks away because now he knows where she is. He knows where she's going. right? It's not that hard to figure that out. Which leads to the scene back at the hotel, the motel he's staying in, right? Where he now has to take apart, like he's taken like his eye out. So he takes the eyeball out. Mm-hmm. And that's where the movie shows its age.
Yes.
Because the animatronic underneath is impeccable, but he looks fake.
Yeah, he almost looks like he's claymation.
So what the problem is there, now they would digitally do that scene and yeah. your eye would read it as completely fake. Here you're like, okay, it doesn't look real, but I can appreciate that it's a real puppet.
Yeah.
I mean, being manipulated.
Yeah. Yeah. When I watched that, one of the things I wrote down is that the makeup looks like I was a teenage Frankenstein.
Kind of, yeah.
Because it looks like it was just, you know, plopped on. And again, it's the only scene in the movie that the makeup actually is, it doesn't, you know, doesn't match the perfection that every other scene has gotten.
Well, then what happens is that he takes the towel and he, because that thing is, it's a hand and it's really working. So you appreciate that that's a real thing, drawing the blood out. And then they go into the eye and the eye looks amazing. The robot chassis looks great. Puts the sunglasses on. And you're like, and that little snippet's gone. And now that is the most iconic look for Schwarzenegger ever. The leather jacket, the sunglasses, because now he's going to the police station and going, like, let's go. He lifts the mattress up, takes all the guns out from under the mattress. We're going. And that's the scene where now we're back at there. And you wind up having, again, I forgot the psychiatrist's name, but he's another 1980s, you know, character actor. They're going through the stuff with Reese. He's telling them what's going on. They're not believing him because he sounds nuts. I mean, it just flat out sounds nuts, right? But that's what they say to him. Like, was he crazy? She's like, oh, yeah, he's pretty nuts, you know? And they're like, well, that guy got up. He goes, oh, he probably was on PCP. Like, they have an answer for everything. He got shot in the chest. He probably had this on. Like, they have an answer for everything because nothing Reese is saying makes any sense. They're from the future. He's a machine. Mm. Like, none of that. 1984 LA, there were some drugs around. I'm just saying. Like, it sounds like the guy's high on anything, right? So that's when the doctor goes out, and then you have, of course, so the doctor walks out, right? He's looking at his beeper, and Schwarzenegger walks in the front door, and he says, I'm a friend of Sarah Connor's. I heard she's here. Now, you can't see her. She's making a statement. And he looks at everything, and the line, Schwarzenegger said he should say, I will be back. That's what he wanted to say. And Cameron said, say the line as I wrote it, and we'll shoot a couple. Now, they did. They shot the line as he wrote it, and they did a couple more takes, and they let Schwarzenegger try it out the other way. And then they watched him, and Schwarzenegger goes, oh, he was right. He's 100% right. That line, I'll be back. Because he's learning. That's the whole point of it. He's learning how to speak like it. But there's that I'll be back. That has been used everywhere and, you know, forever, right? Not just movies. They use it on TV shows, cartoons. Yeah. Everyone knows, I'll be back, right, kind of thing. And then to literally drive your car through the front of it. Now, it's a real building getting hit with a car kind of thing, right? There's not a guy getting killed, but, you know. And then he goes, well, there's 30 cops in this building. Yep, and they all get shot.
Every one
of them. Because going through, you start counting. And then you're like, well, he doesn't kill everybody. You hear people screaming and stuff like that, but everyone's getting shot. He's blowing stuff up, right? He rips the power out. So now they can't see because he can see and they can't. And you're like, man, this is just exactly what a machine would do. Go and just systematically start killing everything in its way. And of course, Reese is a survivor. He gets out. Let's go escape. They steal the worst car they probably could in the parking lot, but it's probably the one that had whatever. And they drive away. And that alone right there, you're at that point. Because again, you're kind of going along, get you way up on that scene. Then you come down and then you're kind of like, okay, then you know the Terminator's coming and it goes up again. Now it comes down. And that's when he tells her when they fall asleep, when she does the field dressing, when he gets shot. And he tells her the story about, like, then she dreams about the dogs and dreams about whatever. And we see the future again. And you're like, man, like, we already seen that Reese living in a world that's horrible. Now they're here and he's fighting them off. And he has the picture of Sarah. And you're like, wait, he has a picture of her? Because now we know he had a picture. And what happens to the picture? It gets burned. So he loses the picture of her. And you're like, well, where did the picture come from? Why would someone have a picture? It doesn't look like, it's not now. It's not today. You don't know this yet. You still don't know. So the whole point is that you're like, this guy knew who she was. And he says, and she goes, well, tell me about my son. And he goes, I would die for John Connor. And you're like, okay. So this guy is friends with her son, who's not born yet. doesn't even know. That's the whole point. He goes, doesn't talk about his dad much, whatever. And it's so, you're like, man, when you're watching the first time, you don't know this. You're kind of just piecing it together. When you know the end, you start watching like, oh my God, he signposted all of this stuff that you won't know. They go, now they're on the run. They're trying to figure out how to get whatever. Terminator now goes to the mom's cabin, kills the mother. They don't show that, but he kills the mother. And they go to the motel. And that's when they start making they're going to make the plastique and the whatever kind of thing, right?
Yeah, the Molotovs.
Right. Well, and they're making all the explosives because they're trying to get on the run. And this is when it's revealed, that Reese came back in time for her. He came back because he's always loved her, and he came back to meet the legend. And she's like, I'm not a legend. I can't even balance my checkbook, kind of thing. And it's so now this super simple, super basic, monster coming to kill a girl, whatever. It's now getting these wrinkles and these folds and these, interesting parts to it. You're like, wait a minute. This guy's not even an idea in anyone's head yet, right? He grows up in the ashes of after the war that has not happened, is led by a man who doesn't exist, but is this guy's, spoiler alert, dad.
Dad.
That's the dad. So you have John Connor leading his dad, who is younger than him, born after him, who retroactively goes back and makes him happen. Blew people's minds. Blew people's minds because no one saw that coming. And that explains why he has the picture, because John gave him the picture so he knew what his mom looked like. Yeah. John not knowing that Reese is his dad because he would never let him go.
Yeah,
I mean, but he has to go.
But you get, even if you weren't sure what the heck was going on with John Connor.
Yeah.
That when they have the sex in the hotel room, it's obvious that
they even do that. He says to her, I came back for you.
Yeah.
I've loved you forever. And it's like, who saw a love story? Who saw a love story getting sandwiched in? Because it's not shoehorned in like so many times. Like, we got to put a sex scene. Makes perfect sense.
It actually ties the movie together.
And now you're like, okay, now you are rooting for him the whole time. You're rooting for her, obviously. Right. But you're rooting so hard for him. You're like, now I really want him to live. Which is why what happens is really, really hard on so many people. And that's why people lose it at the end of this movie. The Terminator's coming to the hotel because Sarah calls her mom and she thinks it's her mom and whatever. It's okay. Well, we're here, whatever. He's on his way. Now he's on a motorcycle because he wasn't cool enough just with the sunglasses and the guns and that. Now he's on a motorcycle with a leather jacket and gun. Like, I don't know how much cooler he could get, but he's really the coolest guy going. He's coming to kill them. They make the explosives and stuff. And then they hear the dog barking and they know, he's there because they always said the dogs can raise it. They run. Now you have the chase scene on the highway where they're throwing explosives. Now, I know it's a closed set and all that stuff, but those are real explosives going off kind of thing, right? They're throwing explosives at him and now they're being chased. And it's just to the point where you're like, all right, how much more can happen here, right? Well, they have their explosion, whatever kind of thing. And you're like, so they're throwing that back and forth. So now you're going to get the Terminator goes under the truck. He gets run over by the Mack truck. And you're like, okay, that's got to be, it's a Mack truck, right? Nope. He pulls himself out. Hey, he's all chewed up. Get out, right? He's got to get out. And now Schwarzenegger's losing. There's parts of him coming off, right? It's all the makeup. Chasing him with a Mack truck? Sure. That seems like somewhere we might have seen that later again. Wait, I've never seen that again in Terminator 2, literally chasing with the truck that comes off the thing. Chasing with the truck, you have literally the what do you call it? Putting the tailpipe of the tanker, the gas tanker, the explosive. Blows it up. You're like, okay. They're playing the soft music. Reese survives. Right. She survives.
This is the end of the movie.
Wait a minute. Did I mention Jason and the Argonauts? Because Jason and the Argonauts just happened again. He stands up. It is literally almost, if you lay it on top of each other, it's Stan Winston paying homage to Harryhausen. It is the skeleton coming out of the ground. It's because remember the other skeleton is on the wall. He comes to life.
Right.
In Seventh Voyage. It is the skeleton coming out of the ground from the Hydra's teeth. And you're like, oh God, no. Like, and you just see and Linda Hamilton has a great reaction. Her fear, and like, we gotta go. Reese is already banged up and he's bleeding and whatever because he's been shot. And you're like, holy cow, like, what is it gonna take to kill this thing? They go to the paper mill or the newspaper plant, right? And you have like they're fighting, he's hitting him with thing, he puts the last explosive in him, it explodes, which kills Reese. It causes the piece to go into Sarah's leg so she can't run. You're like, okay, but it's done. The Terminator's all over the ground.
Yeah.
Can't be.
He's in pieces.
What happens? Now, I understand that, we covered the movie Hardware, which referenced 2080, right? The whole thing where the things in the apartment trying to kill her, and that's really what Hardware's about. Tell me that scene's not inspired by that. The Terminator crawling along, dragging itself after her, right? That is so much exactly that, right? Again, influences come from everywhere. I get it. He's chasing her. She can't run. She crawls through the paper press, and you're like, okay, where is she going to go? And you're like, don't go in there. That thing seems like going to crush you. And it's like not fully functioning. When it comes in, and then she slams the gate down, and it's got her right by the throat, and you're like, oh my God, crush this thing. And that's, her line, right? You're terminated, and hits the button and it crushes him. And you're just like, will this kill it? Will this kill it? Like, is this enough? Can we finally crush this thing? And what happens? The light in the eye won't go out. It just keeps going. Now, we later learn that it's important that it's not completely smashed because they need the chip. That's Terminator 2. That's the whole point. The chip in Terminator 2 is how they get the idea for Cybernine and everything else.
Well, the thing is, but he has his hand on her throat.
Yeah.
When she crushes it, the light finally does go out.
And then the hand lets go.
But the hand falls because it's been severed.
Severed, yeah, yeah.
And the hand falls to the ground.
Right, but it finally let go of her throat and then it falls. Right.
Right.
But I'm saying is, but the arm is safe because they need the arm and they need the chip. And the chip, while damaged, it was still usable because it's inside the head, which is crushed.
Right.
But that's literally where Terminator 2 comes from.
Right. Now, that's the question. This movie, again, it must have had aspirations of some sort. Because,
no, I don't think so.
No, because then why would you have the scene at the end, we've got to save the arm? Because
No. There's no scene that they say it gets chopped off. She then, you only see her going off in there. She goes, there's a storm coming. We know there's something going to happen.
Yeah, but
they never talk about saving the arm. But
the arm is, the guy's guy picks up the arm and he's got it in his hand.
Right, because it's the scene of a crime.
Yeah,
but I'm saying I don't think James Cameron, I'm not saying he didn't have a sequel in mind. I don't think he had Terminator 2 in mind yet. Terminator 2, maybe the nucleus of Terminator 2 was there, that they take the things. But Terminator 2 became such a different movie than the Terminator. Terminator 2 was like, was there a bigger summer? I mean, that was the biggest summer blockbuster that year.
Yeah.
I mean, every single person saw that movie. And then they said, let's take it up a level. The machine guns at the end, the T-1000 being liquid. I mean, that movie just says, hey, we got your level. We're going to raise that level.
Yeah.
And they did. You know, they pushed the level. The CG in that movie is still impeccable, right? The whole idea, though, that, they're cleaning up there and they have here's that arm and whatever. But they don't say to you, oh, let's take this to Cybernine. Let's take this to whatever.
Oh, no. But they do show you that
Cybernine taking it away, right? Yeah. There's some company there, but that's the whole point.
Well, you see the logo on
the logo, on but, the side but it of the never building. Explicitly says Cybernine Systems, whatever kind of thing.
Right.
But that's the whole idea, though, is that you're taking that if the Terminator never comes back, do they invent this? Well, the answer has to be yes, because it had to have been invented for the war to happen,
right?
To have this occur,
yeah.
Did this change history now?
Yeah. See, the only thing that you've got, it doesn't change history according to Reese and the flashbacks, because now you're going to where the machines and they're ruling the earth and it's all barren and everything is blown up. But what about the butterfly effect? You see the flashbacks and Reese is there. He dies,
but he's not even born yet.
Yeah, he dies. Yeah, but Reese is gone. Reese is dead in 1984.
Right. But what happens then is whoever his parents are, remember, the war still happens. That's the whole problem. The war still happens. That's right. The whole point of this is that in Terminator 2, they're like, they're trying to stop the war from happening. If the war is still going to happen, Reese will be born just as he was in the timeline.
Yeah, but in Terminator 2, there is no Reese.
There is, though. He existed.
Yes, but he
came back, and now he died there.
But with John Connor being the titular head now of this resistance, his number one lieutenant was Reese. And so that's
he never got that far. We don't get that because in Terminator 2, he's still a kid. And then that's when they're trying to kill him. The whole point is when you get to the idea that they're going to get to the war, things are changing, but certain pieces will still fall in line.
Yeah.
Time travel movies in general are a problem like that kind of thing because you're changing timelines, whatever. But at the end of the day, the story is so captivating and sucks you in from minute one. This movie is 40 years old. It doesn't let up.
No.
It doesn't let up. The whole time you're like, even to the end when the credits are rolling and the music's going, you're still like, okay, you didn't like, okay, whatever. You think about it, ponder on it.
But you got to remember too, at the end of the movie, that's how the photograph is done.
Yeah.
You know, the little kid at the gas station takes the picture.
Yeah. But then, he says, be careful. There's a storm coming. She goes, yep, I know. And she drives off. But as she drives off, you're like, well, where is she going? And she's clearly pregnant there. She's pregnant and she has the gun, the photograph.
Yeah.
She's pregnant. You're like, okay, is leading to the war.
Right. That's why I'm saying this is what I'm saying is that her son, as he's growing up, he winds up having the photograph and he has it in his possession because that's his mother. And then he gives that to Reese.
In the future. Which then allows them to come. But yeah, I understand that. That's what I'm saying. I understand. But this is the idea that time exists all at the same time. The timelines exist all at the same time. And you can go. This is not the idea of linear time. This is the time idea of like all time existing. Right. Which is you have to buy into that because if you don't buy into that, then the whole movie doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Right. But then again, no time travel movie ever makes any sense.
Your mother and I have just started watching the sci-fi show 12 Monkeys.
Yeah.
But basically the same premise.
Yeah.
You go back and you come from the future. You go back in time to eliminate the virus, which then kills. And you know, it's kind of funny because they go back in time and they're talking about 2015, 2016, 2017. And they're talking about a virus that was going to kill. What happened in 2019?
Oh, 2020. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable how the prescience of the guys who were putting this thing together. If you can dream it, think it, write it, it could happen.
Yep. So like I said, the Terminator again, we had had a bunch of sequels, stuff like that, some, you know, better than others. This movie was, they did not think this was going to be one of the, you know, greatest movie, one of the best reviewed movies of all time now by, at the time, people thought it was just going to be as little, it wasn't a huge critical, you know, some people looked at it like it's a comic book come to life. Some people loved it. And then some people were like, okay, like it's good, but what could it really be? Why they're dumping it this time kind of thing. A lot of the, what happened was some people felt that there was too much killing in it, too much whatever, but those people were going to, you know, poo-poo anything that came out, no matter what it was, right? Especially because there was because that part of you never get into the mid-80s, there was now starting to be a pushback against any action movie kind of thing. Didn't matter if it was Rambo, whatever.
But you talk about too much killing. I mean, what happened a couple of years earlier was The Thing.
But The Thing, that got bashed by everyone.
Right. And it was, but even 2 years before that, you had Alien. And then a year before that, you had Halloween.
But what I'm saying is the gun violence in the movie, people were starting to get up the right to, not the right to censor, that's the fake group, whatever, that Tipper Gore group and all that stuff.
Right.
They just were starting with the idea that we're glorifying guns. And that this movie caught some of that heat. Later, you would get the Rambo part two, all these movies. But the movies that made the most money
were the ones with the guns.
With guns and violence. And people were glorifying violence. But it's just what it was. But I'm just saying so it got that negativity kind of, you know, coming at it. But so many of the people who actually reviewed the movie for the movie itself said how good it was and how good the effects were. And it became an instant hit. Instant. People saw it. They had to go back and see it again. Had to see it again. And it just became so many, like, you know, there are some people who were, you know, obviously, like I said, they were have a problem with the violence. There were some people who they were talking about, well, the machines represent fascism and all this stuff, because people want to put whatever any bull they can on, right? But people in general, right, were like, I don't care. Movie's really good.
Popcorn movie. Right.
But the thing was, it was the wrong time. It's October. This movie comes out during Blockbuster in the summers.
Right.
It's a different feel. I think what happened was because it came out here, which is, again, it made money. It made good money, but it didn't make the hundreds of millions of dollars because you were at the wrong time of the year.
What was the Blockbuster in 84? Wasn't it the Close Encounters?
Might have been. Yeah, I don't know.
Because it was... And Close Encounters, that's a Spielberg movie, but again, there had to be blockbusters in the summer because they had started doing that. I mean, Jaws had come out.
Jaws didn't hurt that.
Jaws had been out a while.
Little movie called Ghostbusters.
Okay, so that was
okay because the other movie, no one ever heard of the second one on there. Indiana Jones: Temple of Doom.
Right.
What was third? Gremlins. Yeah, it's hard for Terminator to be now.
Right.
There's people who say.
Maybe that's why they didn't release it during the summer.
No, they had to wait for Schwarzenegger.
Oh, that's right.
They had to wait for Schwarzenegger. So number four that year, number four at 90 million. So this is the 90 million is fourth, Karate Kid. I mean, we're talking the biggest, Ghostbusters is almost $230 million. Ghostbusters, Karate Kid.
Back in the 80s.
Yeah. Police Academy was 81, Footloose 80. Beverly Hills Cop 77, Star Trek 3 was 76, Terms of Endearment 74,
and not
Romancing the Stone 74. Right. I'm at 10.
Right, and not one of those movies was a big gun movie.
No.
Action.
Right. This is domestic box office for 84, right? So number 11 was Splash, Purple Rain was 12, Tightrope was 13, The Natural was 14, Greystoke, Legend of Tarzan 15. Revenge of the Nerds, Breaking, Bachelor Party, Red Dawn, All of Me. In 1984, Terminator only made $34 million. Yeah, remember, it ran through the holiday season and kept going.
Yeah.
So it has an 84, 85.
Yeah, why it's not on that list.
So that's why it's not even up there in the list. I mean, for crying out loud, Muppets Take Manhattan made $25.5 million that year on, what do you call it? But that's the crazy part is that you think about, because Ghostbusters was June 8th, Indiana Jones was May 23rd. Gremlins was also you released Gremlins and Ghostbusters the same day. What are you, insane? It was two different companies. One was Warner Brothers. It was the Warner Brothers versus what do you call it? I mean, those two huge movies. So, but anyway, it doesn't matter. The whole idea though, to think that the Terminator was not the biggest movie of the year when you think of how big Terminator 2 was. Terminator 2 was they hyped Terminator 2 for a year and a half. Like, it got Star Wars hype behind it. And it then delivers Terminator 2, which blows everyone away. They're like, holy crap. No one had ever seen it. No one had ever seen CGI, liquid metal. It was nuts.
That was incredible.
And the soundtrack was killer.
Yep.
And the having the Guns N' Roses song as You Could Be Mine in it literally just pushed this thing to the end because they had a music video that was all the movie, pushed this thing onto MTV and into places that people might not have ever seen it before. Schwarzenegger was never bigger than he was that time. He was just the biggest star in the world, right? Ed Furlong wasn't, he was an up and coming young he was like the teen kind of thing. And James Cameron's name, man, I made Aliens and then they made The Abyss and then whatever. Like, he started making like literally huge movies. Titanic was after.
Yeah.
After this, to think that you made Aliens, which was a huge hit, you made Terminator, Aliens, Terminator 2, he made Titanic. Like, there's no bigger, I don't care how good or bad Avatar ever was going to be, you cannot get past Titanic. That movie, for a movie that literally half the people in the world hate, just detest the movie because of whatever it is. That movie ran in the Carmel movie theater. It ran for like 5 months, 6 months. It never left. Only has two screens. It only had two screens. It went out all the time.
Yeah. Now in 1984, we were we were not on the cusp of the Blockbuster store, but
plenty of home videos.
But this movie didn't come out right away.
No, you had to wait for this.
That's what I'm saying. So yeah, because you were only six when this thing came out.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to remember when you first saw it.
I saw it. We watched it on VHS.
VHS.
And is at the point where still young enough where the sex scene happens. I cover my eyes.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to see that stuff. It's hard to believe.
Yeah.
Just how much, how much influence this movie has on pop culture, on science fiction, on movie making, like the people involved in it. And to have Schwarzenegger involved, have James Cameron involved, have Stan Winston involved. There's just so many pieces and parts here that are so much bigger than this movie.
Yeah.
That all came together in a perfect storm to release a movie that's still 40 years later, still captivating, still holds your attention, still, the effects are still killer. The stop motion looks great. Like, everything looks good.
Right. I mean, the symbiosis of this film is just, it's mind-boggling when we're doing a review and the thoughts keep coming into your
mind. Especially when you think that this was originally like, well, let's just dump it in the fall around Halloween-ish time. It'll do okay. But isn't that what happens? It's usually a very small thing leads to very big change.
Thing, right.
It's usually the smallest little thing you don't think is going to matter.
Well, how many movies have we done where that was exactly the case?
Oh, a lot of them. Well, that's why we do them.
So you don't think about it. I mean, go way, way back to them. Okay. Yeah. Go back. That movie it had a small budget. It had people that, like James Arness Matt Dillon.
But
the other ones, they were all third, fourth, fifth to sixth billed people. And yet it turns out to be probably one of the top 10 movies of that genre of all time.
And it influenced as much as King Kong did too. It influenced Godzilla. But tie it right back into this. There's something out there. I've seen it already and I shared it. Line up them with Aliens, literally almost shot for shot in Aliens is parts of them. I'll show it to you.
Okay.
I'll show it to you. It is insane. Like literally when he puts the pen and the gun to pick the gun up, watch what Hicks pick up the skeleton with the gun. It's like literally they put the smelling stuff under her nose. She gives her the hot chocolate, it wakes her up. Like, I'm like, holy cow, how did I never see this in my entire life? And now I cannot unsee it.
Yeah.
And Aliens is phenomenal. I mean, good Lord. Aliens just next level crazy. But what's Aliens? It's like a shoot 'em up kind of movie. Right? It's just Aliens conceptually should not be that good. But you have amazing actors and great character actors, and every character is their own person, their own thing. And the effects are, of course, phenomenal, right? And it just gives you one-liners and hits you, and it tugs on your strings as like, because it's a mother and a daughter. Mm-hmm. And then, yep. I mean, and when you watch the extended version, you realize that not only did Ripley's daughter grow up without her, and then now Ripley's, kind of gone through. Now her daughter's grown up, is grown. They show pictures of her daughter as a baby, whatever, and then she's dead. And you're like, oh my God, like she missed her entire daughter's life. And that's what minute is so much more important. When you watch the extended cut, as much as I love the tracking guns, where they show you the automated gun scene, which is a really cool scene. That part there, when you're learning about all the stuff that she's missed and you're like, it's heartbreaking. But that's the thing is, it's just about a bunch of people getting chewed up by aliens.
Right.
It shouldn't be that good. It's an army movie.
Right.
Same thing with Predator. Same thing with like even RoboCop. Like, these movies have no business being as good as they are, conceptually. Just look at the elevator pitch. But you put good actors, good directors, special effects teams. You put all those things in place. And then you get to a point where it's like, okay.
And you add emotion.
Right. But you're not insulting everyone's intelligence.
Right, yeah.
Like, think about how insane RoboCop is. Like, that movie's nuts. Doesn't insult your intelligence. I mean, some of the scenes are played for laughs, like the ads on TV, like the SUX 6000, it's like, now getting 6 miles to the gallon. It's like, oh my God. Like, it's supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
Because it's the humor of it.
And the other thing, too, is back
oh, no. It's also making fun of Detroit. Yeah, I know.
I get it.
Now, if you live in Detroit,
you don't live in Detroit anymore. Now, if you live in Detroit, it's no longer RoboCop. Now it's,
the one with the blind guy where he's got the person trapped in the basement.
Yeah.
Don't breathe. Yeah, don't breathe. Like, let alone Don't Breathe 2, which, you know, God, he's... Anyway, those are different movies for a different day.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, so Terminator, folks, again, if you haven't seen this, are you five? Like, I mean, how old are you? How could you not have seen Terminator by now in your life? And you're thinking, well, I haven't. I think if you haven't, I don't know if you like movies. And I don't mean that to be mean, but I'm just being honest. Like, this is a movie that's easy to watch. Kelly has watched this number of times. Like, this is not a hard movie. It's not like, oh, I don't like it. It's too much blood. Or I don't like it. It's too much sex. Or I don't like it. It's too much love story. Like, this is literally a movie made for everybody.
Right.
You know, kind of thing.
And there's not a lot of blood.
No. And the violence in it makes sense. It's not gratuitous violence.
Right.
I mean, this is not the End of the Wild Bunch where we're just mowing everybody down. Right. This is not gratuitous. The love story in it is not so punch you in the face. There's everything makes sense. It's logical. There's emotion. There's everything. So this is not a movie that's made for one genre. It's not designed to be, you know, limiting people. It's designed to be for everyone, which is why it's endured. So if you haven't seen this, it's readily available. You could, and the HBO Max has got all the Terminators kind of on it.
Right.
But of course, the Blu-ray, the 4K, the everything, this has been released over and over again, cleaned up, you know, whatever.
Yeah. My one thing is that if you're going to watch the movie, do not watch it on like AMC with all the commercials.
Most people don't watch TV anymore, Dad. You got to remember, most people don't watch TV with commercials anymore.
Okay.
You do because you watch cable still. But like, and I watch cable. What I'm saying is, but movies, people don't watch movies like this. Like, people are not going to watch, if they're going to watch a movie, they're going to go find it on one of their streaming platforms and stuff. Right. Most people don't even do gasp, oh no, pull out a DVD or a Blu-ray and put it into a player anymore because, you know, physical media is dead until they take it away from you and you are all like, oh, I want to watch this movie, but I can't because it's not here anymore. And I'm like, wait a minute, yoink, right off the shelf, special edition with all the features.
I guess I'm a dinosaur.
No, but I'm just saying this, but people don't, Terminator is almost never on. It might be on AMC and stuff like that, but people aren't popping it on to watch there.
No, it's when
you catch it, you're like, ooh, and it's a good scene. And then it was on
TCM with Turner Classics when they,
right.
When they then, cause it was one of the 100
show
and they were good. They were doing it. They were picking the,
yeah, but TCM will show it and they won't have commercials.
No, that's what I mean. Yeah. AMC has big time movies, but they have commercials. Right.
But the thing is, but on AMC, when you're watching AMC, you'll catch it like watch a couple minutes. It's like, okay.
Right, it's a background thing, right?
Yeah. But on TCM, they'll show it on TCM when they're doing the retrospective of certain things, especially when they did the retrospective of James Cameron, they show it because this is one of the ones they can show. I mean, they do show because they can't show Avatar yet because Avatar's Disney. Right. So they don't have the rights to that because Disney, you know, Disney kind of thing. So, but anyway, so check it out. If you haven't seen Terminator, you know, it's well worth going to check out again if you haven't seen it in a while. You know, it's just a classic. So, again, do you remember this? Did you see it in the theaters? That'd be something. Because I certainly didn't. I was six, so I didn't go see this in the theaters. That's all Raiders of the Lost Ark in the theater, though, but I didn't see this. But, you know, so we'd love to hear from you kind of thing. Let us know. All right. So that wraps up the March episode. We're going into April. April, we're going back to 1959 for The Mummy, Hammer's The Mummy. Which is celebrating 65 years. Yeah. Okay, so that movie, you say 65 years old. Yep, I believe it. Terminator is 40. I don't know if I believe that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just hard to believe. It's not that crazy, but that's what it is. So, yes, we will see you all back in April when we come with The Mummy, 1959, if you want to go check that out. You know, it's available, definitely out there. It's on Blu-ray, is a little harder to get nowadays because that set, I think, might be sold out. That's a great set, though. But it's out there, so... All right, folks, so like we say right here, keep those cards and letters coming, and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots Bugs Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!